Hey, this is Anthony, and I'm the host of What They Did Not Teach You in School, the podcast that interviews people to get their wisdom recorded so that hopefully you could learn some things that are not taught in school, but should be taught in school. I'd like to remind people that a lot of the things talked about on this podcast relate to investing and finance. The purpose of talking about these subjects are to hopefully inform people and educate them on financial literacy, and to entertain people with some do's and do nots. This is not to be considered financial advice. Before trying anything that you learn on the podcast, be sure to consult a professional.
Podcast PG-13 or no?
No, you're good. Good. Rated R.
Awesome.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's episode of What They Did Not Teach You in School. Today we have a very special guest on the podcast, actually making his return debut. You know, you were one of my first three guests ever on this podcast.
Why was I not the first guest?
I don't actually know, but you might have been the first guest.
I don't think I was.
Wow.
So
that's a shame, actually.
That is shady.
James Malonis. I almost said James in the City because that's like, I don't think actually many people know what your last name is.
No, but I mean, when we've known each other as long as we have, I think you're allowed to use my last name.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, because we've known each other for like I've known you growing up, playing hockey and like stuff like that. So it's great to see like your evolvement over this period of time into a professional, a man, like successful. It's great to see.
Thank you.
Also, it's also great to see over the last like 7 years, or longer, maybe, that you've branded yourself as James in the City.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, you stuck to that hard.
It's been 11 years.
11 years.
I know. Of James in the City. That's insane.
And do you know how many people know you? Like, that I run into? That I, like, through my network or, like, working or whatever, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, James in the City. And I'll be like, I know that guy for so long.
Yeah, you're like, I knew that guy when he had braces.
But that's the cool thing about personal branding, especially if you stick with it. It's the long-term game.
100%.
How did you come up with that name, James in the City?
Honestly, it's a tale that I give time and time again. I started my business in Richmond Hill, where I grew up, and I would take my BlackBerry back in the day down to Yonge and Eglinton and film condo videos. Hey guys, it's James, I'm back in the city. Then I go to Lakeshore. Hey guys, it's James, I'm back in the city. And then one day, James in the City just rolled off my tongue. I'm like, that's fucking it. That is my brand.
No, I love it. Yeah. Cool. Another evolution that I saw over the last 7 years since our last podcast was 6 years ago was in that podcast, you were like, I wake up every morning and I take a drink of wine. Do you still do that or what?
No, that side of me has stopped. I am no longer a glass of Cabernet in the morning.
Yeah. And then also, you were a different body shape back then too.
Yes, I was. I was round.
What made you kind of, because you didn't just get like a little bit in more fit, but you're like a specimen now. What happened there?
You know, my life completely changed. I was in a long-term relationship that was really coming to an end. And right after we separated, I just got right into my fitness. And, you know, the whole hashtag revenge body thing, fuck that. It was just like, I need to get back to who I was before this relationship. Because I lost myself in that relationship. And I just worked my ass off. And then, you know, I was doing all right and hired the best personal trainer. And he has taken me to the next level.
Wow, love that. Yeah, for me particularly, it's like if I want to learn something, I have to spend money on it.
Yeah.
So, like I recently took up piano and, you know, everyone's like, you could just learn it online, but I pay for a person to come and like to my condo and teach me piano.
Yeah.
And that like motivates me both like from a financial perspective, but having that accountability person really adds that layer of like, you're not going to skip out.
That's what it is. It's the accountability. So, I mean, I have it twofold because my trainer is also my partner. Mm. So I have the accountability on both sides where it's like, hey, babe, like you skipped a workout today. There's that. But also it's like just seeing the progress in his app, right? Seeing what I did the week before, the day before, whatever the case was, building that program. And then the nutrition side of things too. Like I thought I had my nutrition down pat. He's like, you're eating totally wrong for what you want to do. Mm.
And were you dating before or after you started working out together?
Before.
Ah, I see. Yeah. That would have been a juicier story if it was afterwards.
No, there's no juicy story there.
So let's talk a little bit about you, like James, the realtor, the person. How did you get into real estate first? Did you like know that you wanted to be in real estate since you were like a kid?
No, I wanted to be an OnlyFans model as a child. no, so my goal in life was to always be, I wanted to work in fashion. That was my life dream, was to be a designer, have a house, like the atelier, the whole, like I wanted to be the next like Gianni Versace. Like that was my goal.
Cool.
Realize how expensive that world is. I worked in fashion management, fashion retail, fashion merchandising. It's a great industry, but if you don't have the money behind you, it is hard. Like it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
And at the time I was going through a bit of like a personal change. My parents were divorcing. There was a lot of change and turmoil in my personal life. And I'm like, you know what? This is not the right time for me to get into this. Mm. So let me go into my next passion, which is housing. I wanted to be a developer. Who at 20 years old is going to give a kid a $4 million loan to build their first house?
Fair. But you could have gone and like started from like, I don't know, the bottom and worked your way through.
Hi, I'm James. Nice to meet you. This is where we're at. Like, that's pretty much it. I started as like a realtor doing leases and okay. I built my way up.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, the goal of development is still there, but I don't think I would develop. So when I first wanted to be a developer, I wanted to do like the McMansion style homes or like townhome style homes. I think now if I was to do anything in development, it'd be non-custom build flips, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a developer in Chicago. Her name is Allison Victoria. She takes old Victorian or old Chicago homes and just completely redoes them, but like changes every aspect. So it's not a flip. They're full on spec builds without it being a full teardown. So that is my vision.
Have you tried anything at any scale of that yet? Do you have anything in the works?
Not to that extent. Nothing in the works right now, but I think in the next 18 months, there will be a project.
Cool.
Yeah.
And currently right now, are you with a brokerage or are you on your own? Where are you?
No, so I'm still with a brokerage. I'm with the agency. They're based out of LA, but we have an office here in Toronto West.
Yes, I've heard of them. Right. Yeah. Okay.
My phone case is sitting right beside me.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Little, you know, branding plug.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, they're a great brand. They have a show on Netflix called Buying Beverly Hills. And yeah, they're fantastic. It's a great, you know, the whole rule is no assholes. That is my life mantra. There's no assholes.
I love that. Yes, it's very true. So what's Old Money Gorgeous? What's that hat?
Okay, so Old Money Gorgeous is a brand that I've been developing for a while. So I cannot confirm or deny, but there may be a clothing line in the very near future.
And it's your brand?
It's my brand.
Nice. Yeah. OMG, Old Money Gorgeous.
Hell yeah.
I actually like that.
Right?
That's cool.
I know.
Where'd that come from? Like Old Money Gorgeous. Obviously, the acronym is sick too. Catchy.
Yeah, you know what? I honestly, like, it's something that rolled off my tongue a while back. It's like I, coming from a, you know, generational family, that whole old money aesthetic has always been forefront of my mind. And I said it one day on TikTok, and I think it was like early days of TikTok, like 2019, 2020 TikTok, and it stuck. And then I started making fun of people about this whole old money gorgeous thing, right? So like, I think my most viral video of this brand was, you know, you just married into an old money gorgeous North Toronto family. This is what you need to know. It's like, ditch the fucking Reitmans, go to Smythe and get a blazer. You have to buy that crusty white dog. You need a white Volvo. You got to fuck your tennis instructor at the Granite Club. Like, it was that. So it was a bit of a parody. And I'm like, there's a whole brand here.
Valentina likes that. You got to get her a hat.
Done. I'll bring one over tomorrow.
Okay, cool. So I want to talk, because a lot of the people that listen to the podcast, they're A, within the Toronto culture. So mm-hmm. they probably already know you and are going to be listening to this because they want to hear more about your story.
Right.
But also they're upcoming entrepreneurs, they're upcoming realtors, and they want to know the grind and how someone got through that, you know, because that's, everyone thinks it's great and it's going to be great and six-figure incomes going into real estate. But maybe it wasn't like that in your first couple of years. I'd love for you to share as much as you can about what your first 2 years looked like.
Yeah.
How you got through that. And also, like, what was the breakthrough moment for you that kind of, because you've been doing this now for how long?
11 years.
So you must be doing okay for yourself. And in order for you to do that, when was that breakthrough moment that you're like, I'm on to something?
Yeah. So for me, I started obviously year one right off the bat with social media. I was the first, I can confidently say I was the first realtor using social media properly for business. None of these Facebook just listed, just sold ads. No one gives a fuck about that.
Right.
I took Instagram by storm and that's how I took off. But I started year one with cold calling and I would make 1,000 dials a week to talk to 100 people a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated it.
Did it work for you at all?
It did. Mm-hmm. And I did so well my first year. I made $750.
Wow.
$750 fucking dollars.
Oh.
I did one lease my first year. So my out was $37,000.
In all of 12 months?
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
shit. And you didn't quit after that?
No. Because my L was like 37,000. So for sales signs, open house signs, marketing brochures, you name it, I did it. Plus the drive time and driving people around.
Yeah.
And then to do one fucking lease to someone we went to high school with, like, that was it. Like, someone gave me a chance. Fine. Great. I took it. I'm like, okay, I'll keep on it. So year two, I stopped the cold calling and then just started focusing more heavy onto my social media. And that's when things started to pay off. So I did a couple of buys and sales here. They're nothing major. Still a lot of leases. But year three is when things really start to pick up. Year four, year five, year six. Everything just got better and better and better and better and better.
And what got you through those first 2 years? Because I can name like 10 people that I know that would have stopped after 6 months or after that, after they did that first tax return and $750, they would have been like, "That this is not for me."
Xanax really helped.
Or Xanax. So it was a tough time for you mentally then.
It was. Sure. It was. But I mean, like, you know, working in fashion taught you how to be tough because you were getting screamed at left, right, and center. You're making no money on set, right? Like, you were there to steam someone's dress. You were there to tape someone's boobs. You were there to shine a shoe, and you're getting paid dollars. Like, you were literally everyone's bitch when you're on set.
So it was that kind of conditioning in the previous role that got you through the tough times starting your real estate career?
It was that, but also look back at like our childhood, how many sports we played, right? We played both house league when we were younger and then into our rep years, right? Like that tenacity, that focus on the ice, you know, the hours of practice that we would take away from our team that I'm like, you know, my dad would rent private ice for me to go skate and build those leg muscles, right? It was that, like you don't quit. It doesn't go right this way. Find another way to get the fucking answer. And that's how I did it.
I love that. So what was that breakthrough moment where you're like, okay, now this is starting to get fun? Do you remember? Was it a moment in time?
You know what? For me, it was, there were like highlights in my career prior to TikTok. But TikTok is when it was like, fucking right, I have a brand. I'm a fucking god in the non-cockiest way possible. And the only reason why I'm saying this, it was when I got the call from this one seller. She's like, listen, I follow you on TikTok. I think you're amazing.
No way, really, from TikTok.
And I'm sitting on the phone and I'm like, are you joking? She's like, I follow you on TikTok and I want you to sell my condo and I want to buy another condo.
How old was this woman?
She was our age.
Wow, okay, wow.
And I'm like, it
works.
Okay, cool, fine. So that was the first one. Then the second one was the parent of my client who was well into her 50s. She was like, my daughter needs to sell her place and you're the right realtor because we think you're a complete asshole. And that's exactly what we need to get this condo sold. And I'm like, thank you for calling me an asshole because I appreciate that. But also, like, why is this TikTok shit working? And it did. It did so well. And then what happened was it just kept going and going and going. So Jane City's been around for 11 years.
And you were primarily on Instagram before that.
So 90% of my business came from Instagram. Now, like 95% of my business comes from TikTok. Like my new business, like forget my repeat and referrals or database, right? But my new business. And no one knows my last name. I only use Malonis. I legally have to trade with it. Everything else is James in the city. Everywhere you go, like my coffee order, I walk down the street, like I was walking here and some kids shouts out James in the city as he's on his skateboard.
That's great. Good for you, man. Do you enjoy the like kind of notoriety of being like known like that?
So that is,
because that's something a lot that deters a lot of people too, is they don't like to be in the light like that.
It's a double-edged sword, right? So obviously I enjoy because it helps my business. It helps my brand. It helps me personally. What I don't like is when I'm trying to have a quiet moment or relax, or I'm not in the headspace to deal with people, right? Like if my partner and I want to go out for dinner, I don't want to be bombarded at a table. Like, don't ask for a picture. Don't talk to me. Don't tell me you think my TikTok's great, because I know it isn't. I mean, it is. But like, just like if you see me on at a two-person table with my partner, leave me alone. If it's a group of four or more, fine, come on over. But if you see me one-on-one with someone, don't bother me. Right? So it's a lot of that.
And they probably expect, because you're very energetic on your social media too, so they probably expect you to be like always larger than life. Yeah. But you're a normal human too. You like to chill.
Yeah, but I mean, it very much is. Like my partner noticed it for the first time. I brought him to a charity event in end of April. And he was like, I can see James and James in the city. Because it was like, I'm talking to him, I'm calm, cool, collective. And someone's like, oh my God, James. So I'm like, hi, oh my God, nice to see you. And he's like, I see the face change. I'm like, yeah, because it's exhausting. It's a lot. It's exhausting.
And what do you think is one of the reasons why realtors hesitate from going on Instagram? Because like you went on Instagram and TikTok, you put yourself out there. A lot of people do it in an inauthentic way, and then people can like kind of read that. But I feel like you do it in a way that's so authentic to you that you enjoy it, as well as it comes across that way, like authentic, and it works.
So for me, I just don't give a shit, right? Like I will post real estate, non-real estate, because my brand is everything comes in one. It's Toronto, it's lifestyle, it's fashion, it's alcohol, it's clothing. all in one. So you get a smorgasbord of shit with my social media. Realtors are afraid to get on social media for a number of reasons. One, they're not comfortable in front of the camera.
Yeah, right.
Right? Two, they're not business-minded. They don't have a plan of how to do the social media. Three, they're not busy enough. So all they know is just listed, just sold. So what happens if I don't have a fucking listing? I'm going to sit there for 6 months with no social media. Great, you're now a ghost. Get the fuck off social media.
Mm-hmm.
Go on Twitter. Tweet about your recipes. Go talk about something else. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because they don't know how to build a brand. They don't know how to be authentic. They don't know how to be intimate with their audience. When I say intimate, I don't mean you got to get in your jock strap and parade around your house naked, right? But intimate being like, let people in. What is going on in your life? Are you dating? Do you have kids? Do you have a partner? Is your partner someone that, you know, maybe the rumors are flying. Are you dating this person? You know what? Fuck yeah, I am. I'm dating this person, right? If you like it, great. You know, go fuck yourself. That's my person,
mm-hmm.
right? Or, you know, I'm a realtor in Toronto, a new realtor in Toronto. I don't have a business yet. Okay, cool. So how can I get started on social media? Welcome to Chinatown. Here are my five favorite restaurants in Chinatown. Adjacent to Chinatown, we have Baldwin Village. No one's heard of fucking Baldwin Village. Talk about that.
I don't even know what Baldwin Village is. What is that?
It's like a tiny little pocket just in, like, on the other side of Chinatown. It's like, I don't know, a kilometer radius. It's like a tiny little pocket.
Mm.
But no one knows about it. Beautiful Victorian homes. Walk to Chinatown. Walk to Kensington. Talk about Kensington. Do a full day in the life. What does a day in the life of, if you were a realtor and you're starting out, what's your day in the life look like? I get up at 5. I do my journal. I do this. I do that. That is the day. That is my day. Now people are going to see that and resonate with it.
Yeah. I watch that kind of stuff and I actually love those types of videos because it shows like the behind the scenes of what a life looks like for someone that is always on the go like a realtor. But I also like seeing it for other things too. So I like that. Do you mentor younger realtors coming up on your team or?
I get asked a lot to mentor people. One, I don't have a lot of time to do so because any spare time I have, I'm spending it with my partner building businesses for us. That's our goal to focus on because we want early retirement,
mm-hmm.
right? So if someone's in my office looking for mentorship, absolutely. But if an agent's with ABC Realty, probably not, right? I don't have the time to go to my, I will give you a 36-second clip of what you should be doing, but I'm not going to mentor you.
Mm-hmm.
But the junior agents in my office, I'll give you leases. I will help you write clauses. I will take you on a showing. You can open up my listings, but I'm not going to hold your hand.
What does early retirement mean to you?
Something in the next 10 to 12 years. So like early to mid 40s.
In Toronto, you're going to stay or what?
That is to be determined.
If you could live one other place in the world, where would it be?
Oh, I mean, anywhere in Europe.
Where? Come on. Europe's a different place depending on where you go.
I know. That's the thing. It's just like it has to be in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
So it's got to be coastal. Like southern Italy, southern Greece, somewhere there. That's...
You're Greek, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? You want to go to Greece?
I mean, like parts of Greece, yeah. But like I really don't want to see my family every day.
Yeah. Okay. So since you started and now, Toronto has changed a lot during that period of time. Speak to me about a little bit about from your POV, how you've seen Toronto change since you started in your career and now.
Way too many fucking bike lanes, first and foremost. Too many bike lanes. Get rid of them.
Really? Why? That's a controversial opinion.
It is, and I can't stand it. Like, I mean, bike lanes serve a purpose, but not on major arteries. They should not be on Bloor. They should not be on Yonge Street. They should not be on University. Like,
but all the best cities in the world have really great bike lanes, no?
But Toronto wasn't built for that. Like, the infrastructure of transit and, you know, cars, it's not built to have less cars, more bike lanes.
Hmm.
There's too many people who commute from outside of the city in.
That's true. Right. And Toronto's just like crazy in general when it comes to like how it was like developed.
Yeah.
We got this massive fucking highway that goes right through the city
mm-hmm.
that so many people use to get from west to east and east to west.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are coming to Toronto as well. Like Liberty Village alone is a shit show in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to drive.
No.
I live right in the center and there's more condos going up. I don't know how they're going to do that. No public transit in or out either.
I live in King West, and Friday, Saturday, I try to take my car out at all because I can't get around.
Mm-hmm.
I also prefer to leave the city Friday, Saturday. Like, I enjoy King West Monday to Thursday.
Mm.
Friday to Saturday, I'm probably heading to my partner's place because he's not downtown. So I'm sneaking out a little bit.
And so what are some things that you like about the new Toronto?
Honestly, just the culture, right? It's a fun spot. It's a fun time. Like, Toronto's really changed. We have great sports teams, like beautiful luxury branded hotels. Amazing restaurants. We now have Michelin star restaurants. A lot of activities come to the city. Yeah, we have horrible crime, right? But what major city doesn't?
Yeah.
Right? But I love the new vibes. There's like a buzz, there's an air, there's a feeling about Toronto.
Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to in Toronto's development?
Just more condos.
I know more condos.
People don't like when I say that, but it's more condos. We have the space to build, right? There's a lot of old strip malls, especially when you look at, okay, when I say condos, another town is in there too. look at these old strip malls in Scarborough and Etobicoke, along Eglinton, Lawrence, St. Clair, Caledonia, like even in central, like North York, right? Those old laundromats and dry cleaners and convenience stores and hair salons. Yes, they're people's businesses, but from I'm speaking from someone who has family that owns these businesses, they are waiting for developers to buy them out because they don't want to put the money in to renovate the space, knowing it's only going to be a short-term wait time. But if you think about that little strip mall, you can probably fit in 50 to 60 townhouses, a couple hundred condo units, right? What's that going to do? It's going to bring in one jobs. Look at the ripple effect of how many jobs one development touches. So there's jobs, but also housing. Toronto needs housing. Yes, Toronto needs affordable housing. But even that, not every development, and I'm going to get roasted for saying this, not every development needs to have affordable housing. Period. Done. End of conversation.
No, it doesn't, for sure. But we do need affordable housing as well.
We do. We do. But you can't look at a condo in Rosedale or on Bloor or at Yonge and Eglinton and say that should be 40% affordable housing. Those, they're not the right pockets for that. I know that sounds so bad to say, but it's not, and it's never going to pass.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Right? Affordable housing makes a lot more sense downtown where there's more infrastructure, more transit, more community central, like centric hubs, community centers, aquatic centers, basketball courts, soccer courts, where people can get out and play and fit into the community.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Versus a very, I want to say, sterile environment. Like Yonge and Bloor, there's no community center. There's no, okay, you have Rosedale Valley, but when you walk into Nate, you can't play soccer in the park.
Hmm. You know a lot about Toronto, clearly.
It's James in the fucking city for a reason.
Okay, without telling us the client or their name, obviously, tell us the story about the craziest nightmare client or like, wow, what the hell did just happen there? Experience that you've had as a realtor.
Okay, the craziest client I had, I call her the Bible Lady. She was fucking nuts. So she had every sensitivity in the world, sunlight, grass, air, water, herself. She was like allergic to everything.
Okay.
So we were shopping at Baby Village, that little pocket, and we walk into one unit and she like clutches her chest. She's like, oh my God, it feels like death in here. Get me out of here. I'm like, bitch, you crazy. So the next time, you know what? I'm going to play with this bitch. So I bring my Bible with me and I just start, I open it up like random, start like reading some random verse. And she's like, hallelujah. I love this place. This is it. This is the right. She offered on it.
And did you close on it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. What are three things you wish you knew before you started in, before you bought your first property?
Okay.
So for the people that are listening, they're looking to buy a property.
Mm-hmm.
What are like, you probably had made some mistakes in your purchasing history or with clients or whatever. What are probably one or two or three things that you wish you knew before buying your first property?
Definitely checking out future zoning. So like if you're looking to, let's say you buy a bungalow or a story and a half and you want to tear it down, like what can you build down the road? Because that really can change your opinion of buying where you are. Because maybe you're on a 50-foot lot and you want to subdivide it into two 25s down the road. The city doesn't allow you to do that. So that's one. That's like a very niche part of it, right? But it's something to consider when you're buying your first place. From a condo perspective, what is the, and this is something that like I have always looked into, even like before I was in real estate, what is the rent to own ratio in the building? Because there are some buildings in Toronto that are heavily rented versus owner occupied. Right? So that's a big thing to consider because that does really affect your values.
Why? Like how so?
Well, tenants are transient, right? So they're in and out more frequently with moves and turnover. So you're at least once a year, you're getting that unit turned over, right? That's, so let's say there's 120 rental units in a building. That's 120 times the moving elevator is getting used. Furniture getting out of the hallways. So now that affects hallway damage.
I see.
Elevator damage, right?
And just annoying people moving in and out and taking up the elevators.
It's that, but it's just like people are and this is going to sound so elitist and egotistical and classist, whatever the case is, but a lot of renters won't spend the money on movers. So they're having their friends do it. And their friends are sloppy. Maybe they've been drinking, right? And they've got the U-Haul downstairs waiting. So they're going to bump the elevator. They're going to bump the hallway. They're not going to care.
Right.
Right? Because at the end of the day, it's just a couple hundred dollars damage that they're losing. So the damage to the closet is one thing, but now it's the damage to the actual building that has to get done. Owners are going to take a lot more care with that, and they're probably going to hire movers, right? Like when I went through my last condo renovation, the flooring company that I used damaged the elevator, and it was a $10,000 bill.
Hmm.
And let me tell you, they got the bill.
What are some, like, give me an example of a couple buildings or pockets in the city where that would be the case where it's more renters versus people that own.
So I am legally gagged not to name this one building, but it is down on York Street by Lakeshore.
Okay. And that one is more renters?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it.
And long then, and short term.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the the example of a building that is more owners? Like, would that be like more the luxury places like Shangri-La or something like that?
No. You don't have to take luxury aside. Like, you can look at a normal building. Like, I'm going to say just right around the corner, like at King and Brand, you have the Quad Lofts, 19 and 23 Brand Street. More owner-occupied than renters.
Mm, cool. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about your content marketing, but more into like the details associated to it. Like, do you plan it? Is it more off the cuff? How do you go about making sure that you post every day or on your normal cadence?
So for the last, like this year aside, this year's been a crazy year for me in a number of ways. I've always had a content calendar, and I spend usually 2 weeks in November where I shut down my business. I don't work for two. I mean, I work if clients come my way, but I'm not actively seeking new clients. Excuse me. But I plan my content for the following year. I do my business planning and the whole like for the next 12 months. The last 6-ish months, I've completely forgotten about my content calendar. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to wing it. And whatever comes, comes. Has it hurt my social media following? I've grown. But I don't feel like I'm bound to what I thought about posting.
Hmm.
Right? Will I go back to my content calendar at some point? Yeah. But I need to figure out what I have to like dissect my social media. Like, what was working, what wasn't working. Because TikTok has changed. Instagram has changed. Everything has changed.
Yeah.
I got to spend time like looking at everything and building it back in a different way. But having, you don't have to have like a full 30-day content calendar, but enough to know like, what am I going to be posting about? Because you don't want to be scrambling for content.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's probably because you've been doing it for so long. You've developed a certain level of mastery that you could just off the cuff kind of like take it right now versus someone who's probably starting out needs a little bit more structure.
Yeah.
And what's the best time of the day for you? Like, how do you get the energy? Because there's probably a lot of like procrastination maybe, or maybe you just love it and you do it. How do you like position it so that you get you're so consistent?
So, I mean, there's times that I will batch content. So whether I'm following my content calendar or not, I will take usually a Monday and spend, you know, an hour to 2 hours just filming content. Because all you need is a ring light, a tripod, and a cell phone. It's not going to cost you a lot. If you don't have those three things, everyone should have a cell phone at this point.
Yeah.
If you don't have a tripod and a ring light, Amazon. It's very easy. Go pick one up. Spend less than $200 on ring light and tripod, right? Set it up and just go. Even if you just like turn on your video and just talk for 30 minutes, you can splice that into so many different ways. You can cut into stories. You can cut into a reel. You can cut it into five different reels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I did a little lunch date video with my partner and I a couple of weeks ago. I made three other videos with that one video because it was just, I had the content.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's very easy to like shorten it even further to make like a 15 second reel versus a minute long day in the life.
And do you, when it comes to creating your content as well as do you like try to be controversial or is that just you?
That's just
sometimes you post controversial stuff and people would be afraid of that, but I feel like people actually love you more for it.
So I say what everyone is thinking, just no one has the balls to say it.
Yeah.
I will say it because I just don't give a shit, right? So I say everything. I don't try to be controversial, I just am. Hmm. Like I came out of my mother's womb controversial.
Okay, cool. I love that. And do you read the comments?
Yeah, I read and respond to every single comment.
Even the haters?
Yep. So I have filtered keywords on all my posts. It's just, it's an automatic thing, both Instagram and TikTok. And there's like certain words that just get filtered out regardless. And sometimes I choose whether or not to block and delete them. Sometimes I approve them. And then I make a video about that person roasting that person back. I'm like, you're going to roast me fine, but be prepared to roast it back or whatever. But most times I just block and delete, but I want to see what the comments are.
Yeah. Cause I was on a podcast earlier this year. And did you read the comments on those TikToks?
Yeah.
They were hurtful. They hurt. Well, they hurt.
Yeah,
like I was, and then I'm just like, these guys don't even know me.
That's exactly it. So I had someone who is very well known in Toronto, and this individual actually lives around the corner from me, which I find very hilarious now. They spent the better part of their early TikTok career using my brand to better themselves, to grow their following. So it became like this anti-James campaign.
Really?
And I ran into them at a restaurant opening. This individual bumps into me, and I'm trying to like watch where you're going, because I knew exactly who it was.
Hmm.
And I'm staring at them, I'm like, you said so much about me online. I'm right here, say it to my face. And they were like, listen here, Hooked on Phonics, spit it the fuck out. Right?
Yeah.
And they couldn't. So people are very quick to make a comment, judge you, talk about you online. But the minute they say it to you want them to say it to your face, they back down.
That's crazy how the world works and how social media works like that.
Keyboard warriors.
Yeah, keyboard warriors for sure. I was actually just, I don't know if you know Cody Skripkowski.
Yeah, I love Cody.
Yeah, and we just posted his episode this week. And he had a couple like haters in the comments section. And he like messaged me. He's like, how do you deal with this? And I was just like, dude, you just got to know those people. If they're commenting like that, they got some issues.
One of the haters was me because I'm roasting for that leather jacket of his.
That was a nice leather jacket.
No, I love Cody. I think he's like one of... I don't get along with a lot of realtors to begin with. Mm. Like I have to for real estate, but Cody's one of those people that I would like legitimately go and spend time with outside of real estate.
Yeah, he's a good, genuine guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him and I go to Othership on every 3 weeks. Have you been to Othership yet?
I'm on their co-pilot program.
Oh, really? Yeah. What's co-pilot program?
So I'm an ambassador for them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. My assistant, Santana, she was like, next time you go, you got to use James's...
my code.
Code.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me know. I'll go for a flow with you guys. Like, yeah. I live right there.
So yeah,
like,
sure. I will, actually. Yeah. We're going to go next Wednesday, actually.
Okay.
So if you're available, I'll text you.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, because... shout out to Othership. It's like when you leave, you feel like $1 million.
Oh, yeah. And they're opening their Yorkville location in the fall. It's 10 times the size.
Really?
Like it's like a 70 person sauna. There's 8 ice baths. Hmm. It's going to just be insane.
Interesting. Okay. So how has your focus on your health impacted your business?
A lot. I mean, I've always been a very confident person. Right. Like from a young age, my dad just like instilled me like just always be confident. So from a child, I was confident. When I started losing my hair, I was still confident. When I gained the weight, I was still confident. But now my confidence is just unmatched. Like, I don't care what room I walk into. I'm still going to be the one that everyone has their eyes on. Right. It's just like my aura is different. My energy is different. But I'm also calmer. Right. And I think that all has to do with like my whole body's in alignment. So my health is in alignment. My nutrition is in alignment. My love life is in alignment. Like everything is just perfect. But the fitness, the determination in the gym, like that 90 minutes that I take in the gym has pushed me to be a stronger realtor in a number of ways. Like one, I'm not like screaming at realtors all day long. It's like I'm getting my frustration at the gym versus, you know, Johnny who can't send a fucking Schedule A properly. So there's that. But it's also just like, you know, my clients see it and they see the determination in my fitness that they know they're going to get the same level of service on their listing.
That's been a big thing for me because when I was first in, I was in wealth management before.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in wealth management, it was like this badge of honor to not take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you had time to take care of yourself, you weren't working hard enough.
Yeah.
Now, that was like me working in an environment with like a bunch of 60-year-olds that's like how they did it. And they were all like fat, massive guts, you know, like and smoking, whatever. And I gained a lot of weight during that period of time. And, I was like always tired. I was always irritable, stressed out, like you said. And when I started to focus on my health and my nutrition, it actually although I was spending time like cooking and like working out and like whatever, it translated to me being more of an endurance, or performance, athlete in business,
mm-hmm.
which was like game changer for me. So, and the people that are out there that are sacrificing their health for business, it's not sustainable. And you'd probably be better off even in the short term by taking care of your health.
100%. Like there's, you know, my partner says this all the time, you know, because people always say, oh, I'll die for my family. Great. But can you commit to being healthy enough to live for them?
Yeah, right. Right. Because the people that care about you the most need you to be healthy. 100%. And if you're sacrificing your health for them, that's actually not like getting to the outcome that you're trying to.
Absolutely.
Let's switch gears here for the last 10 minutes. I want to talk about Toronto,
mm-hmm.
okay, and get your opinion on a couple things. I know you're a big foodie, you're into the culture and the nightlife here, so I'd love to know, what's your top 3 favorite restaurants in the city?
Oh, okay. Top 3 favorite restaurants.
I'm going to go more niche after that, but I just want to know generally, from your perspective, what are your top 3 restaurants?
Okay, so I spend a lot of time at one at the Hazelton Hotel. So I'd say put one at my top because I'm there often. I don't even have to order. My servers just know, depending on what time of day that I sit down, if I'm patio or inside, they know. I don't ask for a menu. They just bring me.
Love that.
I'd say for steaks, definitely Barbarian. Like I spend way too much time at Barbarians. And you know what? As much as people hate it, I love marble on King Street. I love marble. I love me a good Peter Baum and some chinois prawns, and I'm happy.
What are your top three up-and-coming restaurants?
Up-and-coming? I think one of them is already there. It's Dova in Cabbage Town. It's an Italian spot right on Carlton.
Okay.
So Chef Roberto owns Ardo on King Street, and then Dova was his second project. So I would definitely say that one. It's not even up-and-coming. It's there. Mm. From an up-and-coming perspective, Lau Lau Bar and Bar Banan on Ossington.
I love Bar Banan. I've been there.
The souffle is delicious.
Yes, I had the souffle. Yeah. It's great. And I love how it's just like not a lot of people know about it, or maybe they do now, but not a lot of people know about it. You go up the stairs and it's like quiet and intimate. I like that. Okay, so one of the best things that I heard recently was like it was a year ago in the basketball season. I think it was like All-Star weekend or something, and they were like talking about what's the favorite place for a couple like big star athletes to go to? And they said Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they said Toronto because the people are so great and you could have any kind of food that you could think of.
Yeah.
And of course, New York, LA, it's great, right? But I love Toronto because it's so multicultural and you can have the best of whatever and in the city. You can go and find it somewhere, right? So I just want to talk to you a couple niche restaurants and get your opinion on them.
For sure.
Okay. What's your favorite? Let's start with cocktail bar. What's your favorite place to go for a cocktail?
As much as I love hotel lobby bars, I'd have to say Bar Chef.
Bar Chef, yeah. Hotel lobby bars, what's your favorite one to go to?
Definitely the Shangri-La.
Yeah, I love the Shangri-La. It's one of my places to
go. I love just sitting and listening to the piano. Like, I'll order a bottle of champagne and just listen to the piano, and that is perfect for me.
Same. What's your favorite? What's your favorite place to go for Greek?
Pantheon on the Danforth. It's like as close to my Yaya's cooking as possible.
Yes, I love Pantheon too. It's right by my buddy's place. Shout out to Adrian. He has a. Do you know Adrian Marsilio? He grew up with us too,
playing hockey. Yeah.
He has. He opened a chiropractor clinic out there, literally right next door to Pantheon.
Okay, I'm definitely gonna check out Adrian now because got to support. You know, that Richmond Hill culture.
Yeah, he would love that. Yeah, exactly. It's funny how a lot of people from Richmond Hill just like ended up, and we all stuck together at a out of the same kind of like cohort of people, and we all still know each other and stuff.
Well, if you think about it, like we started playing hockey together at such a young age, and then it continued from like AA to single A to AAA.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as we got older, you know, some of you guys have become my clients. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool that it all kind of comes all full circle.
Yeah. So there's something about long-term relationships like that like hold dear to me. Maybe it's because I'm Italian, but I really like that.
Yeah.
What's your favorite restaurant? Or what do you think is a type of restaurant that Toronto has that Toronto does not have that you've tried in like another country or city that Toronto should?
Okay. I mean, we have really cool Japanese spots and a few good like omakase spots, but I think what we're missing is like a really good, like, okay, I know I just said Pantheon, right? That's like authentic Greek. I think we need like a good Greek kind of like resto club, like Milos, right? So the closest Milos is Montreal, right? We don't have that here. Right. So I think something like Milos would be fantastic. But also what Toronto's really missing is that New York style jazz bar.
Right. Yes. Right? Very true.
Where you can go and order, you know, anything from a burger to pasta to a nice steak. You have a, you know, a jazz performer on stage with a saxophone and the music. That's what we're missing.
I agree completely. I've actually said that multiple times. I've always said that if I opened a restaurant, it would have to be a place that's like I picture like, you know, in that, the scene in Casino where he walks in and they bring the table and the people are playing up on the stage and it's like nice food.
It has to be like a more of like a classier, bougier style though. Cause I think Toronto has them, but
they're a little bit more, grungy. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm sorry to say that's like enough with the grunge, enough with like anything west of Bathurst being a trend. Like, come on, like, wearing Birkenstocks to a bar is unfucking acceptable. Like, enough. Put on some dress pants.
I'd rather be barefoot.
Yeah. Birkenstocks are like human birth control.
What's your favorite place to go to for a plate of pasta?
Man, my guy's at Dova.
Dova.
Yeah.
I got to try Dova. Okay.
Yeah.
Date spot. Where's the best place to go for a date?
See, the thing is, like, with F and I, we always have really great dates no matter where we go. I like something that I can have a good, intimate conversation with him. So it doesn't matter whether it's Antler on Dundas or Blue Bloods, whatever the case is, but I like a nice, intimate spot. But I think a good spot for a really good date night, you know what? I'm going to go Don Alfonso.
Don Alfonso.
Because, like, you can really bouge it up a little bit, but it's not too loud. Because I don't like a loud restaurant. Mm-hmm. So yes, you're paying an arm and leg for dinner, but it can be intimate. It's got great views because it's at the top of the West End, right? So you're overlooking the water and you can have a really great dinner, nice intimate tables. I think that is like the perfect spot for, actually, no, I lied. I'm going to go Daphne on Richmond.
Daphne on Richmond. Haven't so heard that one.
It's owned by Inc. Charles Kabuth just opened it like four weeks ago, maybe a month ago. Mm. And it looks very much like Sophia in Yorkville, just different color scheme with a big patio. I'm gonna go Daphne for
Valentina typing it down. Don Alfonso is sick. It got a Michelin star, right?
Yeah. So I went to Don Alfonso like from the first location on Toronto Street and then followed it to Blue Blood and then now at the Westin. Great spot, but they're both good for date nights.
Toronto has a couple big private clubs now. Mm-hmm. You're a member at,
I used to be a member at Clio.
Clio, that's right. And yeah. Used to be, did you like it? What do you think about private clubs in Toronto in general? Are they worth it?
So for sure. Okay. So I was, an old Spoke Club member, which Clio took over. What I liked about Spoke was I had the reciprocal club at the Island Yacht Club, which saved me money from having a cottage. Mm. So I can get on the ferry, head over to the island. I can go play tennis. I can go play bocce ball. I can go for a swim, have restaurants, whatever. Excuse me. When Spoke closed and Clio opened, I had high hopes for Clio. The problem was it was a private club with benefits. It's like a friend with benefits kind of thing, right? So you have your members who are exclusive, but then you have everybody and their mother on the VIP like influencer list. Mm-hmm. So I looked down at the head of concierge. I'm like, why am I paying my X number of dollars a year to be here when I'm on every single invite list for every single party? I'm not getting a preferred discount at the restaurant. I'm not getting a preferred bar at these parties. So there really is no benefit to me being a member here. Mm. Now I looked into Soho. Everybody and their mother wants to be a Soho member. I don't understand it. Because when I'm going to LA, New York, Chicago, no matter where I'm going in the world, I'm not staying at a Soho house. I'm staying at the St. Regis, the Peninsula, the Plaza, like the Rosewood. I'm not going to go stay at a Soho in London.
There's something about being like, let's go to Soho, come with me, you know, like then that like prestige, especially if you're in like business or something to entertain clients.
I'd rather go to the St. Regis, right? That's my thing. But now if you have money and you can get into the Rosedale Golf Club or the Granite Club, right? Or the Toronto Club, absolutely. Or the National, right? But from like a really good, like, very accessible, especially if you bleed conservative. There's the Albany Club on King East. Mm. It's a nice little spot. It's quaint. It's quiet. A lot of politics go on in there, but they have a really good Sunday roast beef dinner.
Okay, great. Yeah, because I've been thinking about getting a membership to some kind of like club for a while now, but I've just never been able, probably because of COVID, I've just never like pulled the trigger on it. So I wanted to know your opinion on that. Are you a member of a club right now?
No.
No?
Oh, there you go. Other than like a private wine club? No.
Private wine club.
Oh, yeah. So there's the Vintage Conservatory on Lombard. They're actually moving on to King Street at King and Simcoe at 224 King Street. So it's, you know, you there's no membership fee per se. You rent a locker. That's your membership. And you can have your own booze in there. Mm. They have food. So you can go and buy, you know, oysters and sliders and charcuterie boards and whatever. You bring your bottle of wine. You entertain your guests there. And it's amazing.
Cool.
And yeah. It's 24-hour access because it's non-licensed.
Very interesting. Okay, so let's, we're going to ask you a couple more questions here.
Okay.
What's next for James in the city? What are you looking forward to right now?
So all I can say is if you think Kim Kardashian and how she's taken Kim and blown into every single brand possible, that is what James is doing right now. There is skincare, there is clothing, there is collaborations, there's potentially television. There's a lot of avenues outside of real estate that is coming. Mm-hmm.
And do you still love real estate as much as you used to?
I still love real estate. I hate what Toronto real estate culture has become.
Well, how so?
Everybody and their mother has gotten their license in the last 4 years because they saw $1 million listing, selling Sunset, buying Beverly Hills, all these TV shows. They don't know what they're doing. So they have their license and they do one or two deals a year and they act big on social media and they create all this clout for themselves. They don't know their head from their ass sometimes, you know? And it's frustrating doing a deal with these new realtors because you don't want to slight them in any single way. But when you get their offer in, there's full of fucking mistakes, right? So just go back to your day job. Like, don't get into real estate if you're not going to do this full time.
And I usually say this to everybody, but I don't think this is a necessity to, but I'll ask it anyway. Where can people get in touch with you online?
Oh my God. TikTok at James the City, Instagram at the James in the City. Or if you want to find me in person, probably on the patio at Hazleton.
Okay, last question. Yeah. I ask this to everyone on the podcast, so you could take some time to think about it, whatever. But what is one piece of wisdom that you wish you knew a lot sooner?
I'm going to say patience. And that is everything from career to health to relationships.
Were you an impatient person before?
Very much so.
And how did that hurt you?
I would overcompensate and I would try to do things or force things. And once I just stopped and allowed it to be, things fell into place. I wasn't trying to force a relationship. I wasn't trying to force my business. I wasn't like all these things that I stopped forcing and everything kind of fell naturally into place. And it's when the universe tells you it is right for you, that is when you will receive it. That is when your perfect person will fall into your life. That is when your business will take off. That is when that opportunity you've been waiting for knocks on your door. That is when that sum of money will appear in your bank account. When the universe tells you it is right, it'll happen.
I got goosebumps from that. I love that. Valentina just winked at me because she's been telling me that for a while. James, I appreciate you greatly. This has been an amazing podcast, just like fast paced, love it. And I look forward to the next time. Because one of the great things that I love about video and like audio is that you get to just stamp this time, like in this moment in time. Mm-hmm. And we did it 5 years ago and now we did it now. And I look forward to doing it in the next 5 years and seeing where we both came.
I'll be back.
All right, beautiful. Thank you for coming. Until next time, Valentina, take us out. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Hope you enjoyed it.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram at The Wise Investor.
Until next time.
This is What They Did Not Teach You in School. We hope to see you soon.